Good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for September 28th, 2014. Koyo Kubose here. So very glad you joined us. Well, this time of year is when olives are ripening on trees here in California, and I bought some green olives, unripened olives, from a place that was listed on Craigslist. I've been buying it from this sort of a ranch, I guess, 3 years now. And I am what they call home curing olives. I love olives, so and I'm willing to try, learn new things. So a few years ago, I started curing my olives, and they're all kind of olives. My favorite one for curing is Salavello olives, the big jumbos. And there are several ways to cure olives. By curing means, you know, olives, when they're unripened, or even if they ripen on a tree, you can't eat them. You have to, there's very bitter substance in them. And you have to, you leach it out in some way, or, and there's a relatively modern way of using lye, L-Y-E. You get this lye, which is powder chemical. I can't remember the chemical name of it, but it's the same quality, thing that is used in Drano. It's powerful, caustic chemical that can clear out your drains. Of course, you don't use it in strong solution. You use about a tablespoon or so of lye powder. Not, you know, Drano actually has lye plus other additives, so you can't use Drano product itself. Okay, but the lye powder, you could put it into a tablespoon into maybe a couple of gallons of water, and then you soak the olives in there for so many hours, and it draws out the bitterness. Okay. So I've been doing this for several years now, and the first year I tried it, it turned out okay, and the olives tasted okay. See, what you do is you take, when they're curing, then you take one out and you rinse it off, and you take a little knife and you cut a little wedge out to the seed of the olive, and then you take a look and see if the color is changing. It gets darker as it cures. Okay? And when it gets to only halfway dark from the outside to the center of the olive, a little bit more way to go. That's the way you check the progress. And then when it's just about fully cured, then what you do is you take it and you rinse it with water. I talk to people here, relatives and so forth, and at once upon a time they did it, maybe everybody did it for a while. Even people who have a nice olive tree in their front yard, they'll do it for so many years, but after a while, you know, you get tired of it and curing olives. But you can learn from them. So I talked to them, and one of them said, use these 5-gallon buckets, and I have a friend who can get new 5-gallon white buckets from Kikkoman Soy Sauce Company after they use it, and you know, so their food grade plastic, and then I drill inside another 5-gallon bucket, and then you put your olives in there, and you put the washer lid up with water, and you let it soak for a while, and then when you lift up the inside bucket, the olives are all in there, and the water what drains out through the holes that you drill in the bottom. This is a very efficient way. And then I fill up with more fresh water, and you got to do this maybe every 4 hours of a water rinse for several days in order to get to leach out the residual lye solution that penetrated into the olive. So you keep doing this until the rinse water is clear after you soaked it a while. Then you know you're ready to go, and then you start olives in a vinegar salt solution with, and I add a lot of minced garlic, and this year I'm going to try to add a little sprig of rosemary and a sprig of thyme, which Adrian is the master, my wife Adrian is the master herb gardener in our back patio. And so these will be, these are fresh rosemary, fresh thyme, grown right in our back patio. And I'm going to cut a few sprigs of those and put that in there in a bottle. And then you, you got olives. Yeah, and so you know what I was thinking is, how did it become known that you use lye to cure olives? Man, that's you know, such a caustic thing, and I don't know the history of it. I suppose we could Google it and maybe find out the history of it, but. Gee, you know, so many things like that, that human beings, and they passed on this, these things in civilizations, cultures, you know, it's so nice that you don't have to start all over again to learn about these things. Then I thought, as I was thinking about this, how can we use this as a metaphor for life, learning lessons in life? You see, we're all, let's say, unripened olives that grew on a tree, and we have bitterness in us. That's our nature. We have dukkha, unsatisfactory aspects of being a human being. Now, what is the lye? Lye is all the, is a chemically caustic thing. This is the lessons, the experiences that we learn that cure us of our own internal bitterness and makes us ripen. Oh, no longer bitter. When we learn our, it's in a way counterintuitive, but this is what sometimes is called reverse enlightenment, or black is white, you know, or something that's caustic. We learn something about life through struggling with the difficulties, and then it deepens and makes our life richer. We learn humility. We learn gratitude. And we become a nice olive. You know, this reminds me, when unripened olives are so bitter, I bought an olive plant from a guy a few years ago, again on Craigslist. And we were talking and everything, and he used to be a Cub Scout master, and he was telling me, he joked with his kids when he would tell them they'll be hiking and they see an olive tree. He goes, "Hey, there's some olives, guys. Help yourself." And they would go and they pick these olives off the tree, and they don't know any better, and they put it in their mouth, and whoa, is it bitter. And then I told them the story of, you know, when you get an olive that is good to eat, all olives have a seed in there. And I would tell the kids, Hey, you know, after you eat your olive and you're sucking on that olive pit, suck on it for a half an hour, and then you know what'll happen? It'll crack open, and there's that delicious little seed in there. And we laughed together at these, you know, initiation types of jokes, that pranks that get played on kids. Well, well, well. There are some ultimate caustic dukkha events in life. Maybe you could call them life crises, tragedies, and of course, human mortality is one of these. And with that in mind, as a segue, I'd like to introduce today's guest to give us a Dharma glimpse, Charlene Soyo. She was from the LM4 group. Right now we're on our LM7 and 8 groups, going through our 2-year program, become a lay minister. She lives in Chicago. And if I could ask Charlene Soyo for a Dharma glimpse.
On September 19th, 2014, at 5 p.m., my friend and brother-in-law died 11 days after turning 55. When his brother Steve called to let me know Russell died, I thought of the Dalai Lama, primarily because Russell really liked the teachings as the Dalai Lama shared them. They spoke the same language, kindred spirits, both able to see life, truth, through engineering eyes. One Dalai Lama quote spoke to me. The Dalai Lama, when asked what surprised him most about humanity, answered, "Man, because he sacrifices his health in order to make money. Then he sacrifices his money to recuperate his health. And then he is so anxious about the future that he does not enjoy the present, the result being that he does not live in the present or the future. He lives as if he is never going to die, and then he dies, having never really lived." Most of Russell's life was like this, anxious about the future, going through the motions of life, school, work, marriage, kids. Russell had had several brushes with death. About 6 years ago, after the last brush, a motorcycle accident where he broke his hip, Russell changed. On the outside, he looked the same. But he started making different choices. He chose to sell his motorcycle. He chose to stop videotaping the kids' events and start enjoying them. He chose to stop pretending he was happy if he was cranky. He chose to be honest and connected, to stop catering to unreasonable demands, to freely offer support to others, even if it moved him outside his comfort zone. For at least 6 years, Russell really lived. In the moments when I selfishly wish he had more physical time on this earth, I connect to a verse from the Dhammapada. Better to live one day connected to truth than to live 100 years in ignorance. Russell lived years in ignorance and lived at least 6 years connected to truth. More than my selfish wants, I trust in his choices. He died as he had been living, a warrior, courageous enough to be himself. As long as I stay connected to the teachings, whenever I watch an episode of Xena, Warrior Princess, Russell is right there with me, poking fun at my silliness and enjoying the show. Thanks, Russell. I'll love you forever.
Thank you very much. When I heard in this report about account about going through the motions of life, of school, of work, marriage, kids, I think this describes a lot of us. Seems very human nature to, and I think we could all relate to the fact that somehow we think, this is when we're young, we think that a significant life experience or something, you know, really life-changing is right around the corner. And I wrote an article some years ago that I titled Unpack Your Bags. And sometimes we live our life like we're on a trip. We left home and we're traveling, okay, and we're living in motels and we packed a bag, our travel bag, okay, and we're going through life as though we never really settle in. We do at home. When you say, oh, at home, then you really settle in to home, which is what we could say is the present moment. You're at home. But sometimes in life, we're always looking to the next moment around the corner. When we're little kids, you say, oh, my brother, older brother, someone's going to school. I can't wait to go to school. How come I can't go to school? And then you get old enough and start into school. And after a while, you say, hey, my school sucks. We could use that slang term. Because the teachers are tough on me, and I've got to learn this and got to learn that, homework and stuff. When I get through with compulsory public education, and then I'm going to go to college, and college is where you get to study what you want, and you're on your own. Man, I can't wait for college. And then college comes, and you say to yourself, oh, man, all these tests. My life is from one test to another test. This is rough. Man, wait till I get out into the real world, earning some money and buying things. You know, I'm so poor now, and I got these loans and financial pressures. Man, when I'm out there working, then I'm going to buy this car. I'm going to do. And then you get a job. Now your life is not from test to test, but from paycheck to paycheck. And office politics and other things, you say, hey, my life is, I'm just so feeling kind of trapped, and I feel like I'm just going through the motions, and I gotta wait until I retire. Then I'm really gonna live it up. We never unpack our bags. Somehow, through awareness, and sometimes some big events or life crises makes us think about these things because we know about human mortality, but somehow, just like teenagers, you know, by the time you're a teenager, you know about the reality of human mortality and so forth. But you live like you're going to live forever, taking chances you really don't know. Okay? It's only through life experiences, particularly ones that cut deep and shake you up, sort of reverse enlightenment idea, where in the spiritual world, misfortune is fortune. Article in The Center Within, written by my father, Reverend Gyomi Kobosa, you know. It's when these things shake us up that we learn about real life, we could say. And we don't have to be waiting for the next life-changing thing to happen around the corner. It's right here now, if we have awareness. This is what Buddhism teaches. Maybe somehow it could be related to the lie and the olives and this kind of thing too. The older we get, the more we realize and the more we experience our grandparents, our parents, you know, the generations moving on down the line. And pretty soon there's no buffer between, you know, when we're young adults, our parents' generation, our parents are still living, or maybe our grandparents are still living. Mortality doesn't seem so close to us. But in a blink of an eye, those generations are gone and become an orphan. Your parents are no longer alive, and you're the next generation in line. This is why people have turned to religion, or sometimes they turn to a lot of other things too to cope with these things. But to learn the kind of awareness of life's realities, and then to cultivate, or to unpack one's bags and be fully present in a moment. And that's what it's about. Thank you very much. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going, and you have a very beautiful day. Thank you.